another episode of Side Hustle City, the podcast that helps you turn your side hustle into your main hustle, with your hosts, Adam Kaler and Kyle Stevie. All right, guys, back again. I've got Kyle Stevie with me.
Hello.
How is it, Kyle? How's everything going? You were in traffic on your way here, I heard.
I think you and the people in this office were the only people not trying to get across the Ohio River when I drove down here.
Well, we just had opening day yesterday, and I'd completely forgotten about it. It was the first time I missed Reds opening day, and I had a mining rig go out, and I was worried about trying to get that back up and running, and I just completely forgot it was opening day. I was like, why is there so much traffic? I was like, oh, yeah, it's everybody trying to get downtown to go to the game.
Yep, and what's old is new again.
What's old is new again.
Or the Cardinals put the beat down on
the Reds are going to be terrible this year. If you watch any of the preseason games, they're going to be awful.
I don't watch.
It's going
to
be the worst.
That's the one thing that's happened with COVID is my desire to watch sports is – it's weird. I just don't really give a shit.
No.
NBA I used to love to watch, but all it is now is just isolation play. It's boring as can be.
Well, and a bunch of entitled rich people.
I don't care about the entitlement. I don't care about their political stances. I'm there to be entertained. So all I give a shit about is the basketball fun to watch? And watching somebody dribble a basketball 17 times before they go to their left or go to their right is boring. Like, give me the Spurs. Give me the Warriors when they were at the – when all
David Robinson when they, you had – yeah.
No, when they were just moved the ball. Like, it was always an extra pass. It was fun to watch. It was more of a European style. Mm-hmm. Not this, like, AAU, we're going to ISO or maybe set a pick at the top of the key. It's just boring. It's all good.
Yeah, I hear you. So, yeah, guys, so we've got Luke Sestito back from C-Prop, Crypto Properties, and this is round two of our conversation on NFTs and DeFi. And if nobody knows anything about NFTs and DeFi, I don't know what world you've been living in, but it's all over the news. Crypto's going crazy right now. Institutional investors are throwing money into projects, mostly Bitcoin, obviously, and Ethereum. But you've got things out there like Polkadot, which is huge. It's another platform. You've got, obviously, Binance has its own platform to create tokens. You know, Ethereum's always been, you know, the big one. But now NFTs are hot. And if nobody knows what NFTs are, Luke spoke a little bit about it on last week's podcast. And, it was very, very popular podcast. So we decided to do another one this week and go more into detail on NFTs, the opportunities that we see with NFTs, and then also DeFi. But I think we should probably start with DeFi. Luke's been investing his money into some interest-bearing DeFi projects out there. So Luke, welcome to the show again.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me back. It's the first time I've ever been invited back for a second date. So either you guys are having trouble getting guests or I'm getting better. I don't know what to do.
Well, I think we had so much to talk about last week. We didn't want to have a 2.5-hour podcast episode. So we thought we'd break this up into two things. And I've been looking at some of these crypto wallets. Obviously, Coinbase has its own wallet. Crypto.com has a wallet. And I just downloaded the Crypto.com wallet, and there was a particular project on the Crypto.com wallet. I watched a video. And if anybody's wondering about some of this stuff and you want to learn more, obviously you can get onto YouTube, and people are going crazy talking about this stuff. But there's a native token on Crypto.com on the wallet called CRO. And CRO right now is paying, I think it was 75% interest if you hold the token, if you stake the token in the platform, which is kind of crazy. Actually, it's gone down because so many people are doing it. It's now 38.3%. But the reason is you've got people out there who want to trade, but they need to borrow whatever the token is that you're getting interest on, whatever you're loaning the platform. People want that token. And a lot of times it's a stable coin. So I think CRO on the crypto.com platform is their stable token, right? Gemini's got one. It usually pays a decent interest. But people want that token and they have to put up a certain amount of collateral. And generally, if you on the crypto.com, I think the collateral is 1.2% of whatever you're borrowing. So, you know, that's available. So that protects the crypto.com people, but also protects your investment because you know you're going to get your money if these people default or whatever. So Luke, so that's a little, I guess, rundown of DeFi. Explain some of the stuff that you, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what you've seen in the past, probably from the first or second quarter of the year 2020, is the emergence of this decentralized finance concept. And what everyone should be aware of, first of all, it's kind of a cool side hustle. So, you know, your shows about side hustle, how to make money on the side, how to have multiple revenue streams. This is really a cool way to get a multiple revenue stream, but it's risky. Okay. So, you know, the first thing I would tell people is this is the Wild West of finance. And there's been many projects in the last year and a half where people have put their money in and the team disappeared. Okay. So you're not talking about putting your money in a bank or in any kind of institution where it's protected. You're talking about putting it in vaults online, written into smart contracts where hackers are going to try to steal it. And I'm trying to scare people a little bit because you should be a little bit scared. You should think it through before you put money in, and don't put in any more money than I would say to start out than you would lay on a gambling table at a casino. So it's a high risk, but it's a very high reward way to make money.
And it's always been in the crypto spaces, never invest more than you're willing to lose.
Right, right. And so, you know, for me, I really love the DeFi space, and I've done, it's actually been my income over the last 7 or 8 months. I generate plenty of income to satisfy my needs. And I think other people can do it as well. I mean, you have areas in the DeFi. So the one you mentioned, you said now it's paying, what, 30-something percent?
Yeah, 32%.
Okay, so you have a wide range of returns in the DeFi space, ranging from there's vaults that are run by companies like Aave or companies like Yearn, where you can stake Tether or USDT or other stable coins, and they'll pay you anywhere from 12 to 20% annually for staking that coin.
And some of the people that are listening to our show, they don't understand what a stable coin is. So nobody understands what that is, you know, tell them about exchanges and why stable coins exist on those exchanges.
Okay, so let's just start with the first ever coin made was Bitcoin. And Bitcoin, the reason people bought Bitcoin was to exchange value over long distances, right? And Bitcoin, we want to hold Bitcoin now because we say it's a store of value and we want it to go up. So Bitcoin goes up and down against the US dollar, against the euro, against every currency in the world. A stable coin is just the opposite of that. A stable coin is pegged to the US dollar or to the euro or to some currency.
Gold.
The majority
assets,
of them that we use are pegged to the dollar. So one token of USDT is always equal to about $1, maybe 0.999 cents or maybe 1.01 cent, but it's a very close correlation to the dollar. So the idea is when you put your valuable money, say $10,000, into 10,000 Tether or USDT coins, you're always going to have just about $10,000. And then people would move that money to these big exchanges. And then when the price of Bitcoin would go down, they would exchange it into Bitcoin. When the price of Bitcoin would go up, they would exchange it back into the stable coin against the dollar, wait for Bitcoin or other cryptos to go up and down. So every time they can make money.
So essentially it's a digital form of the US dollar on these exchanges. And a majority of the exchanges that are out there are not US-based exchanges. So they don't have dollars available to trade for crypto. It's always USDT or some other stable coin, DAI or whatever it is. So if you're on an exchange that is not US-based, chances are it does not have USD. You can deposit USD into some of these exchanges, but you're going to be trading with USDT.
Yeah, correct. Or some stable coin. But keep in mind, the real reason people hold stable coins is they want to get out of the crypto market and not worry about the fluctuation. So when the market is going good, everyone wants to be in Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever crypto is of their choice. But when the market starts to, you know, go sideways, or God forbid the market ever go down, then people want to run to the stable coin because they provide a safe harbor. So the world of decentralized finance came along and they said, okay, so if you let us hold your stable coin, we'll pay you more money in interest, we'll call it, than your bank will. So, you know, today at your bank, let's say maybe you can get 1%, 1.5% on your savings. If you put your money into a stable coin, you can get 12%. Some places maybe up to 20% on your money.
Yeah, and I'm looking right here in crypto.com's app. So CRO, which is their stable coin, is 38.3%. That's what it's paying right now in interest. And that's per annum, not APY. And then SUSD, which I don't even know what SUSD is, that's 27.7. DAI is 14.8. USDT, what we're talking about, is 11.75. USDC is 11.5. True USD, TUSD, is 2.36. And Atom, I don't even know what that one is 7.67. But there's a bunch of cryptocurrencies also where their prices fluctuate, where they'll pay you interest on that as well.
And this is where you make what I say is the money, the worthwhile money. So if I'm going to take a risk, this is my opinion. It's not financial advice. I always tell people, don't do anything I do. But this is how Luke's mind works. If I'm going to risk my US dollars in the Wild West, you're not going to get me for 20%, 30%, 40%, even 50%. I need a lot of money to make it worth my while. And in addition, there's another piece that you have to consider. So I'm going to give you an example of one company. There's a company out there right now called DeFi Yield Protocol. Its token is called DYP. So DeFi Yield Protocol has their own token and they're developing vaults that you can hold your money in and you can get paid interest, okay? DeFi Yield Protocol will pay you 35% on their token. So if you buy 100 DYP tokens and you place them in a DYP vault, they'll pay you 35% interest in their token, okay? Now, is that interesting? To me, it's not. And here's why. Because I'm getting paid in their token. So if the price of their token goes down, how much money am I really making if I'm losing money? You understand?
Exactly. Well,
okay. DYP has something super great that I'm going to tell you about. DYP also, it's the best one I've ever found. Has the ability for you to be a liquidity provider for their token. And let me explain to you what that means. That means if I have $10,000, I can buy $5,000 worth of Ethereum or Bitcoin or USDT. Okay, there's four choices right now with more to come. But let's stick with Ethereum, Bitcoin, and USDT. I can buy one of those three. The Bitcoin has to become wrapped Bitcoin, meaning I can trade it on a ERC network. But if I take $5,000 in one of those and $5,000 in DYP, I can then become a liquidity provider for DYP on their site. So I take and I post that $10,000 on their site. There's a process that you go through. But right now, the APR is between 250 and 300%, which means that if I put right now $10,000 into this DYP and I become a liquidity provider, you know, I'm making almost 10% to 12% to 15% on my money every month, depending on how it fluctuates. So if I put $10,000 right now and become a liquidity provider, I can then expect that I'm going to pull between $1,000 and $1,500 out every month. And that's not touching my principal, which I have put in. So I'm working with this company to be a liquidity provider, and I'm getting a percentage of every transaction that happens. And over the course of a year, I'm making three times my money back.
Wow.
Sound interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even know about this project.
Yeah, so this to me, I actually found this project. I was lucky to find it early on at the end of 2020. And in the beginning, if you put 10,000 in, you were making almost half an ETH every day. So now there's about $41 million that are held by liquidity providers. And that $41 provides liquidity to the market. Now, what does that mean? Let me explain that to you briefly. So you guys all have heard of Craigslist, right?
Yep.
So on Craigslist, if I want to sell something, I go and post on Craigslist. I want to sell a bicycle. And then I sit and wait for someone to call me. Someone that wants a bicycle calls me. I sell my bicycle. That's okay for a bicycle. But in the world of crypto, everyone wants instantaneous, right? They want it now. So because of that, we had this thing called a centralized exchange, like Binance, like Gemini, like Coinbase. You go, you post your tokens for sale, and someone buys them. If no one's there to buy them, the exchange fronts the money to buy them and takes a commission and then sells them to the next guy. The world of decentralized exchanges now allows me to sell to you, Adam, or to you, Kyle, my tokens. And if no one there's to buy them, there's a liquidity pool. So when I put my 5,000 worth of Ethereum and my 5,000 worth of DYP into the liquidity pool, now there's both DYP and Ethereum there for someone who wants to either buy DYP or sell DYP. And so every time someone comes to trade now, that pool begins to fluctuate, but there's an instant transaction occurs. But when that instant transaction occurs, 0.3% of that transaction goes to the liquidity provider. So I get a fee every time things are traded on the market, and that fee is what pays me my 300% APR.
So, you know.
And here's the best part.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's paid to you not in the DYP token, but in Ethereum. So you get paid in wrapped ETH, WETH, which has the same value as ETH. You exchange it and it's Ethereum. So you're earning Ethereum every day while you sleep based on being a liquidity provider.
What are the requirements to be a liquidity provider since you're going through the whole process with them?
You just have to know how to do it. You just log on to their website and you go through. The process, you have to have either Ethereum, wrapped Bitcoin, USDT, and then some of their tokens. And you need an equal amount. There's a lot written now on the internet that explains to you how to do it and walk through the steps. But it's not a difficult process. And then once you stake your liquidity provider tokens, you can choose to lock them up for 3 days, for 30 days, for 60 days, or for 90 days. The longer you lock them up, the more money you make. But in addition, even once the lock period expires, as long as you leave them sit there, you continue to earn.
What is the lockup period?
It can be as little as 3 days, as many as 90 days. And so the longer you lock, the higher the APY.
Gotcha.
So I'm looking at their site right now. It says our liquidity pools are paying 283.77%. And I can tell you that it's true because I've been doing it for several months now.
So it looks like you have to connect a MetaMask wallet. Is that right?
Yeah. So if you're logging on through your browser, yeah, you need a MetaMask wallet that holds your tokens. And then that MetaMask wallet. So let's say you have a MetaMask, which it's another subject, but it's easy to set up. This is a crypto wallet. And then that MetaMask wallet, you can log into the DeFi Yield protocol site. And if you don't have DYP, there's a little ticker at the top that says get DYP. And if you click that, it shows you everywhere DYP is sold. So right now it's sold on Uniswap, KuCoin, Gate, and then you can use fiat money to buy it directly. But for me, I bought from Uniswap, the decentralized exchange. And if you buy on Uniswap, then once you have it, equal amount. Remember, if you have $10,000, you want to buy five and keep five in Ethereum, Bitcoin, or USDT. And then you take that and you stake it. It walks you right through it on the site, actually. But the point I'm making to you guys is it's a side hustle. Again, let me make a caveat here. There's fees involved. So when I go and I buy the tokens and when I post the tokens, maybe it's going to cost me $100 to $120 to do all the steps I need to post it. So it's not a cool side hustle for somebody that has $500. You need to have, in my opinion, right now, probably, you know, close to five figures. You know, I mean, you could do it maybe with 5,000 as well. But if you think in terms of if you post 10,000 and you're getting 1,000 to 1,500 back every month, then if it costs you $120 to get in, it's no big deal. But check this. Also, the other good part, you get paid daily. So every day when you log on, it will show you exactly how much cash you made while you slept. And you can claim your rewards anytime. So, yeah. You know, my suggestion is when you claim the reward and put it in your wallet, you have to pay the Ethereum gas. So generally, I claim once every 7 to 10 days. But every day in your wallet, you see it earned. And if the price of Ethereum goes up, then you're getting taken advantage of it. If the price goes down, then I wait to claim. So you can strategically wait to claim. And then when you buy the Ethereum, I change it to USDT because now I know, boom, there's my rent, there's my groceries, whatever you need. So the idea here is it's a really, really great return for your money. I haven't seen one this good anywhere else.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. I think what people don't understand, because if you're in America, you know, you look at the interest rates right now, right? I mean, if you get a checking account or whatever, they're paying you, what, a quarter or 1% or something like that. You know, you're not getting anything.
Right.
People don't get it. Right. If you leave America and you go to places in South America, people are paying 75% to borrow money from the bank. You go to Argentina right now. I mean, if I put my money in an Argentinian bank, right, there's risk involved in that. But I could literally go down there with $10,000 in cash, and I could make over 50%. On my money, sitting in an Argentinian bank.
You just got to get out of the Argentinian bank.
But there are Argentinian banks that will allow you to deposit U.S. dollars, not the Argentinian peso. Because if you're making 50% on the Argentinian peso, but the inflation on the Argentinian peso is crazy, then you're not making as much as 50%. You're not making 50%. You're making like 20% or whatever because their inflation's so ridiculous.
Yeah, but they always seem to be like at the cusp of
collapse.
Yeah, major social strife.
Well, this is what I'm saying. You know, you've got people that live in those societies, right, mm-hmm. where they're afraid to put their money in the bank, even if they're making 50% on it, because the money they have is Argentinian peso, which is inflationary and could collapse at any moment. So even though they're making 50%, the bank's then loaning that out at 75%. So it would make a whole lot more sense for those people in those countries to play in crypto, to keep their money in crypto and not in the Argentinian peso. So you're thinking, why would anyone pay me this much?
You see this happening, though. I mean, you know, this is why you see certain governments taking action in countries like Argentina to sort of make this illegal, because the people are much more comfortable moving into crypto than they are with their own currencies, especially if you can find a crypto like Tether that purports to be backed to the U.S. dollar. But, you know, Adam, don't let anyone forget on the podcast that this is not without risk. So when you put your money in here and you lock it up inside of this smart contract, you know, it has not happened. And the other thing I like about DYP, they have all of their smart contracts, not just checked by one company, but double checked by two different companies to make sure that they're secure. But there have been projects that have been hacked. And if you get hacked, your money's gone. Okay. So, you know, the return is unbelievably good. But as my dad used to say, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And all I'm saying is this for me has worked very well. It's one of only two DeFi projects that I actively am staking in, but there is some risk involved to it. To date, it's been perfect. It's been great. And that's why I'm talking about it, because it's one of the best projects that I've seen out there, and it pays in Ethereum. I like projects that pay me in Ethereum or Bitcoin much better than projects that pay me in their own token, because projects come and go, but Bitcoin has shown that it has staying power. And, you know, right behind it comes Ethereum. So, you know, there is risk. It's the Wild West, as we said, of finance. But tell me this, I mean, other than selling drugs or doing something illegal, where are you getting 300% APR on your money?
Nowhere. Yeah, nowhere. Yep.
So check out DYP, because this idea of being a liquidity provider, it's not limited to DYP. There's other companies also that let you be a liquidity provider, and they may pay you 75% or 100% or 120% or 40%. So because what you're doing is you're actually letting your money, you're playing the bank. In the world of DeFi now, you can be the banker. And by being the banker, you're making the fees now that made so many people in past generations rich. So it's a nice side hustle. I would say you have to have a little bit of money to get involved with it. But, you know, if you're making 300%, then you're talking about getting your initial 10K back in a period of a few months.
In your opinion, what happens if, let's say that there's a super large correction with Ethereum or with Bitcoin or whatever, and makes a lot of people start taking cash out as opposed to keeping it in with whatever the crypto they're in?
There's going to be a super big correction, of course. But I mean, with the world of DeFi, remember, whether the price is going up or the price is going down, you're still earning. When the price is going down, you're earning less. Now, the thing I like about DYP and also some of the other DeFi projects out there is you can stake half of your money in USDT. So 50% of the money that you've stacked in a token that is a stable token.
How does that impact your returns?
It's going to affect your returns, because if the price of Ethereum goes down, you're making less, right?
Yeah.
But also keep in mind, there's something in this game called impermanent loss. And what that means is if a whole bunch of people all of a sudden decide to sell DYP and buy Ethereum, remember, your money in that liquidity pool is the pool. So when everybody sells DYP, you're getting more and more and more DYP. And they're taking your Ethereum or your USDT or your BTC, right? So that pool isn't always 50-50. That pool can become 80% of one and 20% of another. So whether there's a big correction, or let's say DYP goes from, it's around 270, 280 to $10. Now you're going to end up with a big chunk of Ethereum because everyone's buying DYP. So you either have to wait for the pool to come back and stabilize, but if you cash out at that time, yeah, there's issues. There's issues there as well.
So I posted an article from Yahoo Finance, and everybody, like, Luke is actually a CPA. Like, Luke isn't just some random person who doesn't know anything about finance. How long did you work as a CPA, Luke?
I'm not giving any financial advice to anyone, Adam. Right. This is the Wild West. It doesn't matter if you're the king of the universe.
Yeah, none of us are giving financial advice, by the way. This is just what's out there, what's happening right now. But I want to let people know, like, I mean, you do your research. You're a former CPA. You kind of, you know what to look for, and you understand why this is paying what it's paying. You know.
Well, my thing is, I love the numbers, right? So the ideal of decentralized finance, it appeals to me because, like you say, I understand basic accounting. I like numbers. And so I like it, right? You have to have a little bit of patience, and you have to be a little bit of a nerd in order to get DeFi. But there's money here, and it's not without risk, but there's a lot of money here, and you don't make a lot of money without risk.
Right. Well, so let me read this and tell me if this makes sense to you. And I want our listeners to hear this. This is from Yahoo Finance, and it's actually from Bloomberg, but Yahoo Finance reposted it. It says a swath of shadow banks in the $1.6 trillion cryptocurrency market have figured out how to generate returns of 12% with minimal risk. Lend US dollars to hedge funds so they can buy Bitcoin. Some of the largest non-banks in cryptocurrency include BitGo, BlockFi, Galaxy Digital, and Genesis, are stepping up to meet investor demand for dollars amid a long-standing weariness by banks to lend to individuals or companies associated with Bitcoin and other digital assets. In this case, they're lending to hedge funds that need cash to buy Bitcoin for a trade that is almost guaranteed to pay out in annualized returns that have recently hit 20 to 40%. And this person quotes, "The people with all the money, the banks, the brokerages, they're not in this space yet." He's a chief investment officer at Arca Capital. He said, "Everyone wants to borrow dollars, but there's not enough dollars in the space. There is a huge cash shortage." So they're trying to, they need cash, right? And in the, you know, I guess instead of going out and finding the cash elsewhere, they're looking within the crypto space to find this cash, to find lenders who are willing to give them the cash so they can do these deals. And, you know, it says with traditional savings accounts offer just 0.5% in a world that hasn't seen interest rates rise meaningfully in over a decade, non-bank lenders that accept digital assets can earn double-digit interest due to a severe shortage of traditional currencies like dollars and euros. The wariness of banks to lend to firms or investors for cryptocurrency goes back as far as Bitcoin itself, with most institutions shunning an industry they saw as enabling money laundering, drug trafficking, nefarious pursuits. And just to let people know, there was a big issue with credit card companies allowing you to buy crypto. This was 2 years ago, buy crypto with their credit cards. Now news comes out, Visa is now allowing it. PayPal is allowing you to buy crypto.
Doing settlements. It was a MasterCard that settlement on Ethereum.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a warning here that, you know, a lot of these things lack FDIC regulation and things like that. But it says, here's how the trade works. It starts with a price discrepancy between the spot price for Bitcoin and the value of derivatives contracts that come due months in the future. What's known as a basis trade. So if anybody wants to look this up, go look up the term basis trade. And then it says on March 15th, Bitcoin traded for $56,000, while the July future contract on the CME was $60,000. A hedge fund could buy Bitcoin at that spot price and sell the July futures, meaning the derivatives would gain value if Bitcoin fell. Doing so on March 15th locked up a 7.7% spread between cash and futures. Annualizing that over 137 days between March 15th and July 30th, when the futures contract expires, equates to a 21% annual return. So the hedge fund needs cash to buy spot Bitcoin. So that would be willing. So they'd be willing to pay what it seems to be a crazy, crazy rate of 12% on a loan, as long as it can earn 21%. Or a 9% profit on that trade. So the spread between the spot and the futures has been even higher in recent months. So, you know, the basis trade's paying 42% annually over a week. And Michael Saylor is one of the guys who's big time into this. And as you know, he runs one of the largest crypto funds that's out there. And he's constantly on CNBC and he's constantly talking about, you know, Bitcoin this, Bitcoin that, it's going to this and that. But I mean, the guy's well respected in the space. So DeFi, I feel like, is here to stay, Luke. And I think there's, you know, the Wall Street bankers are coming up with creative ways to get into the space, even if banks are hesitant to kind of give them the money to do so, or investors are hesitant to do so. They're looking to the DeFi space to find this cash, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I saw an interesting graphic the other day, and it said that as money moves from the baby boomers to the millennials and the other generations, they anticipate there's going to be a move of almost $30 trillion with a T of assets from traditional finance into crypto. So if you think the entire crypto market right now is, it was just below 2 trillion, maybe it crossed it, I don't know. But yesterday it was 1.9 trillion. You're going to see, as that money starts to flow in, a lot of that money is going to go into DeFi. Because, you know, what do people want? People want a way to earn money and earn passive income. And, you know, to be honest, at least for me, you talk about doing side hustles. I don't really know many side hustles where you can invest $10,000 and pull out, you know, $1,500 a month immediate. You know, you're talking about starting to generate revenue the next day. You and I have both been involved in multiple business startups, you know, and we know it takes a long time. You put $100,000 into a business startup to pull $15,000 in profit could take you a year. could take you 2 years even. Whereas something like this, you put $100,000 into it, you can make up to $15,000 the first month. So, you know, this space of DeFi, yeah, it's going to have some ups and downs. As Kyle pointed out aptly, the market will correct. It always does. But I think there's a big difference between now and 2017. And that big difference is now we really see the institutions and the banks starting to move in, which I think, you know, again, I'm just saying this as a guy who loves crypto, not as any kind of financial advice. I think having the big institutional players in, you're going to start to see less of these huge declines and huge jumps, and you're going to see more stability than we've seen in the past. Maybe I'm going to be wrong. I think we will see some retraction, but I don't know we're going to see 90% retraction.
I just talked about this. Yep. The more money you got in it, the more stable it is. I mean, look at gold. When was the last time gold dropped 90% in the course of a few months like Bitcoin did in 2017? It's just because there's so much liquidity. There's so much money in gold. I think it's a $10 trillion asset. And, you know, Bitcoin is always being compared to gold. So Bitcoin now is what, a trillion, just Bitcoin, not all the altcoins and everything else. I think it's around a trillion. So, you know,
yeah, I think you're right.
And you got people talking about, hey, Bitcoin could eventually get to become a $10 trillion asset. And I think that would put the Bitcoin price at almost $1 million for one Bitcoin. But imagine that happens. It's going to be much more stable than it is right now. So, you know, now we're on a run up. And eventually there's going to be a correction. But when there is a correction, it's not going to be 90% like it was in 2017. What were you going to say, Kyle?
It says 1.1 trillion.
1.1 trillion.
As of right now, according to Coinbase.
So I was really close. So 1.1 trillion.
And trading volume is 58.5 billion.
Yeah. So, I mean, say we go to, you know, a lot of people, Luke, are talking about we're going to get to around 120,000 or something on this. Some people are saying 300,000 on this current run. You know, let's just say it gets to $100,000. You know, generally, Bitcoin kind of starts having its dip maybe 2 years before the next halving event, which I think would be this September. So we could be looking for a peak in the Bitcoin price and other crypto prices in September sometime. And then maybe you start having a gradual decline, but will it drop 90% again? Probably not. Will it get back to maybe, you know, $30,000, $50,000 if it gets up to 100 grand? Maybe that's where it stops, right? And then people start reaccumulating. And that reaccumulation period happens maybe a year and a half, 2 years, like this last cycle happened. And then you start seeing things go up after the next halving event. And then we go to $350,000, $500,000 during that next cycle. So the reason Bitcoin continues to rise, and I think a lot of people don't understand this, Luke, is it's a fixed asset. There's a fixed amount. There's a fixed supply of Bitcoin, and it's fixed at 21 million. And that's all the Bitcoin there will ever be. And I think over $6 million Bitcoin are lost forever because people threw away their hard drives. You know, Satoshi, you know, who invented Bitcoin, has 1 million that have never moved.
Oh, the ones from the Silk Road that were obtained by the U.S. government.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a bunch of Bitcoin that's never going to be sold, that's lost forever. So you take that out of the 21 million, and you know, maybe you've got, say, 15 million Bitcoin that'll ever exist. There's more millionaires in the world by far. There's more than 15 million millionaires in the world. Not every millionaire can own a Bitcoin. And if you're looking to hedge the dollar, hedge fiat currency, if you're looking for an alternative to gold, Bitcoin is it. Bitcoin is it. And it's, you're never going to have more than that. If you want to know, hey, what can I invest in that I know there's only a fixed supply and you've got a ton of people that want to own it? It's Bitcoin.
You're right, Adam. I thought you were wrong. I just looked it up on Google. There's 19.6 million millionaires in the world.
Yeah. So there's only 15 million Bitcoin actually circulating right now. There's not enough for every millionaire in the world to own one Bitcoin right now. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot more people that are interested besides millionaires in Bitcoin too. So add all those people in. And what people don't understand is you don't have to buy one Bitcoin. It's not like, you know, the stock market, we have to buy one share of stock. You could buy, I mean, it's, you know, however many Satoshis you want, which is the dot after the Bitcoin, like 0.1, you know, 0.2, 0.3. So you can own, it's infinitely divisible practically. So you could buy a dollar's worth of Bitcoin if you want. And now you can say you own Bitcoin. But people don't understand it. And I don't even know what it is. I think less than 1% of people in the world right now own any cryptocurrency at all. Which to us, you know, being in this game for as long as we've been in this game, it just blows our mind that nobody would, like someone would actually not have any cryptocurrency. And I think it scares people away,
I think it's still hilarious that the whole, the only people that use it are drug dealers and.
That's not even true.
It's so easily traceable. Like that's how, they traced some of the Russian hacking from the 2016 election season by tracing all their public key transactions. It took a while, but they got it out. Now try doing that with serial numbers on dollar bills.
Yeah. Good luck.
It's impossible.
Yeah. Dollar is the easiest. I mean, it's the easiest thing to not trade. I mean, if you want to do something illegal, use dollars, use cash, use fiat currency.
But it's easy to spin yarn like that because people don't understand what it is. It's got kind of like a mysterious vibe to it. So they use these mining machines and they run these algorithms, and then all of a sudden, poof, out of magic, these Bitcoin are created, and then they don't. Then people just accept the fact that they're worth this, and it's kind of like, well, yeah. I mean, it's the trust part of the network because it's a trustless deal, which still blows people's mind. They're like, they don't understand the fact that people give that. Like, this is the whole point of money, even being a thing, is that people give it value because they trust that I have this. You're going to accept what I give you in return for what I want from you, and as a means of exchange. For Bitcoin, it's become more of a, you know,
there's people in Africa that trade cell phone minutes as currency.
Yeah,
they trade their cell phone minutes with each other as a form of currency.
Yeah, so there's trust in the network that people are getting the value that they think they should get for what they're giving up.
And why wouldn't you? If you don't trust your government, why wouldn't you own Bitcoin? If you don't trust your inflationary currency, like people in Argentina, which it's crazy inflated, right? I mean, go look at a chart. Anyone who's listened to podcasts, just go look up at the Argentinian peso versus the US dollar over the last 10 years.
The only concern I would have if I were in this country is getting locked out of exchanges. You know, like not
right.
Being,
but
not
but
being
let me tell you something cool, Kyle, because okay. I've been traveling. I've been to in the last, few months, I've been to Morocco, I've been to Brazil, I've been to Turkey, I've been to UAE, I've been to the Seychelles. Guess what they all have now? Bitcoin stores. Guess what you can do? You can take your cell phone into any of those stores, trade them a piece of Bitcoin or a piece of USDT, and guess what they'll give you? Local currency.
No, I get that. But my point is, what if the government doesn't allow that to exist in your country? What if they...
No, but some of the countries I've been in, they don't.
So how are they getting away with it?
No, it's just people. It's just people people on the internet, and they pop up the store, and you can go and get the local currency. Hmm. So even the more the government suppresses it, the more people are going to do it, right? So it's like we say in the U.S., anytime China makes the technology illegal, you probably should invest in it.
Luke, I was at the Rock and
Roll. I used to think that was true, but I think coronavirus has pretty much shown that people are willing to do whatever they're
true
told.
Facts.
I mean, U.S. is, I mean, we've been bad, but we haven't been, people have kind of been able to live their own lives as long as they're not on the coast. And you look in England, like Britain, holy cow, it is insanity. Like those people it was almost like, that's the best and worst part about Twitter is that you get to see how other people view their own countries. It's depressing. So yeah. People are just like, oh, I can't go to the gym for another 6 months, 18 months of just being locked up inside of an apartment.
Just wild, man.
I know. So
imagine this, Kyle. Imagine if you were trading DeFi and making 300% for the last 18 months. What could you do when you left your apartment?
I don't know, Luke. What have you been doing?
I told you. I was in Brazil. I was in Morocco.
He's in Dubai right now. Yeah, he's in Dubai right now.
Dubai's open. Brazil is open. The Seychelles was open. Turkey is open. You know, Turkey, I told you guys last podcast, great country and really crypto friendly there.
Look for me a house there.
Dubai.
Luke, next time you're in Turkey, I need
in Turkey.
Yeah, I'm gonna buy something like near the river.
Wasn't that the point of C-Prop originally?
Yeah, it was to help. Well, it was to help
find Turkey.
Well, no, we had a partner in Turkey. We had a partnership in Turkey.
Blue Seas or whatever it was. Who was it?
Yeah.
What was their name, Luke?
I can't even remember. It was weird. Now you're putting me on the spot.
I know it was weird. But anyway.
Well, we did originally with one of the big real estate portals there.
That's what it was. Yeah, it was a real estate portal.
Talk about a niche market. British purchasers of Mediterranean coastline in Turkey.
Dude, Turkey's, I mean, half of it's in Europe. You know, there's a river that separates Europe and Asia right there.
Oh, I'm a big history buff when it comes to the Byzantine Empire or Byzantine or however you want to
say it. You would love it, man. They still have the towers and the tours, and it's a beautiful city, Istanbul.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see the Golden Horn. I want to see all of it.
I got a buddy, Gokhan. He's from there, and he was he corrected me when I posted something about some atrocity that had happened in Turkey before it was technically Turkey, right? Mm-hmm. 1911, they killed a lot of Armenians, but it was the Ottoman Empire, right? So it was pre-Turkey technically, right? But it's still – the land that is Turkey, you know, the stat came from someone who said, hey, in Turkey, because nobody knows where the Ottoman Empire was because it wasn't just in Turkey. It was all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to say Turkey so the people know where Turkey is when you're talking about statistics that had happened in that country. But Luke, I was literally – so to go back to your point about the more people try to – the more governments try to outlaw something, the more popular it gets. Rock and roll. I was at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland last weekend. We were walking through, and almost the first major part of the exhibit was all of these congressmen and everyone else who came out and, you know, said rock and roll is terrible. You know, it's going to lead to all this and that. It's going to be the worst thing ever. It's immoral, you know. And then, you know, they were doing it to Tupac when, you know, he was doing his stuff. You know, Congress had met, and you had these witnesses coming out saying, oh, it's the worst thing ever. Listen to what he's talking about. But what happens? Every single time the government comes out and tries to do something like that, it just makes it more popular.
Who's that rep from California? He looks like the eagle from the Muppet Show. You know who I'm talking about that just loves to be he's on the finance committee or something like that, and he just sits there and just blasts anybody that has anything to do with cryptocurrency.
Well, the government's
really
all
bad in 2007, 2018. He was really.
I can't remember his name, but I mean, look, Jay Clayton from the SEC. Here's an example, Luke, and this will boil your fucking blood. So, Jay Clayton is now consulting. So, Jay Clayton, SEC, former chairman of SEC, he was completely against Bitcoin, it seemed like. Yeah. Completely against Bitcoin. So, he put all these regulations in place, right? You know, the SEC said, you can do this, you can't do this, you can't do that. Now he's consulting for a firm on the regulations he put in place.
Yeah.
And the guy who invented the bit license in New York, the New York bit license, remember that guy? He's now consulting with companies on how to get a bit license.
But Adam, since when do rich people ever want middle class people to find an easy way to make money?
Well, they want it to be a secret because they want to stay rich.
This is what I mean. I mean, you know, look, when you're talking about trade and DeFi, okay, I didn't mean this to be a commercial for DYP, even though I love it. There's tons of these projects out there where you can invest and make money. But think about this. Up until this generation of people, who could go to bed at night and make this kind of money and interest or dividends except the extremely wealthy? Nobody.
Nobody.
So now all of a sudden you see a virtual shift where a middle class guy can invest a little bit of money and make this kind of returns. Of course, the banks aren't going to be happy because basically you're taking the job from the bank, right? So now instead of the bank having to be in the middle and provide people liquidity for their stocks and bonds and money, a guy can sit at home that has a laptop or a cell phone and do the exact same thing.
Well, the thing about that this is it's thing, it, the banks aren't willing. Like, the banks are cocky. The banks don't want to loan money for this kind of stuff, right? So the banks are like,
you saw the same thing in a totally different industry in Switzerland, and that was with the Swiss watch. When the whole idea of automation came out where the watches could now be electronic, how many Swiss watchmakers went out of business? Bunches of them, because they thought, no one's going to use a watch like that because our timepieces are amazing. There still are amazing Swiss timepieces, but you know, how many people now have an Apple Watch? How many people now have a cheap electronic watch? This totally revamps businesses. And this is what's going to happen to the banking industry. Well, the good news is for the U.S. banking system, they're starting to buy in And they'll buy in at a high price, but they've got the money. But, you know, for the guy who wants a side hustle, here's a side hustle that'll make you some money.
Well, there's this, and let's talk about NFTs now. So let's switch over. So explain what the whole NFT thing is. They're mostly Ethereum-based, right? I mean, there's some other ones out there. But, you know, a lot of NFTs are Ethereum-based. What people are doing is there's platforms out there where you can actually deposit some Ethereum and the gas there, because there's gas fees, and to process the transactions and things like that. But you can create an NFT, which is a non-fungible token, which essentially means when you create that token, there's no other token that's ever going to be like that. It can't be copied. It is what it is. So you've got artists like Banksy who's taken his artwork and literally burned the original copy and certified this new digital copy as a legitimate real version. So you've got artists, you know, art collectors clamoring to get this artwork. And he's not the only one. There's a lot of them. NFTs is huge right now for art. Yeah.
Here's a better example. Okay. So for me, the greatest basketball player of all time, Michael Jordan. What if you could own a video clip of Michael Jordan doing one of his famous dunks? Okay. That becomes an NFT. This is a perfect example to me of an NFT. So if the NBA said, we're going to create our own line of NFTs of video clips of our greatest players, but each NFT only one person can own.
Yeah.
It's like an electronic trading card.
It's a good way to put it.
So how much would people pay to own one of Jordan's dunks?
And that's what they're buying. And they're buying LeBron dunks right now. I think they're going for some ridiculous amount of money. And one of the companies that I think it's NBA Top Shot or something like that is what it's called. They just raised another some ungodly amount of money, millions and millions of dollars. And they're the like NFT platform for all these NBA NFTs that are going on right now. And I know people that have bought them. And one guy, I think he invested maybe a couple hundred grand and he's up $20 million. Not a person I know, but there's an article out there about him. So the NFTs, I mean, it's an interesting way to collect, right? Kind of a side hustle. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people back in the 80s when we were kids, they would have considered collecting baseball cards and trading baseball cards kind of a side hustle because you're making money off of it, right? But this is a digital way to do collectibles, right?
Yeah, I even saw there's a company online called Decentraland. Maybe you heard of them. They have a token called Mana. And so they make NFTs that are pieces of virtual land. It's not real land, but they have a fake city and you can go in. And they said that the price has appreciated from 2017 until now, from like $400 a piece to $1,800 a piece. So there's all these companies, whether they be artists or gamers or sports, that make these NFTs. Personally, I don't own even one NFT, only because I don't really follow. You know, if you want to sell me a basket, Jordan Duncan, a basketball NFT, I probably will buy it from you. But if you're going to try to sell me a drawing that you did as an NFT or a CryptoKitty, you're probably not going to get my money. But I think the market for NFTs, as it expands into the sports world and into the gaming world, yeah, you're going to see it even continue to grow because the amount of money that people will pay is just crazy.
Well, and like Logan Paul, he's a big YouTube guy and, you know, a lot of people, young people follow him. I mean, he created I think he's the one who created, you know, crypto backed digital art of his own and sold it for $3.5 million in less than 24 hours.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think too, if you look at the music industry, you know, even back in 2017, we were working with some guys in the Netherlands who were looking for a way to take artists and protect their songs and their IP and use the blockchain. I think you're going to see NFTs start to become another way that artists can protect their art and also give fans a way to interact with artists and online personalities, more in the future. I mean, this is, I'm probably too old for this, but this is what the kids like. You know, I know Shane, he used to be a big gamer. And he would buy outfits and you upgrade your characters. And they pay real money for this, right? And then there's real money to be made when they get into these tournaments. So this sort of virtual lifestyle lends itself well also to the NFT. And I think that's why you're starting to see an uptick in the NFT market. And as sports teams, et cetera, buy in, it'll continue to grow. For me, I prefer the DeFi just because I understand it better.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there now. I mean, you remember the first NFTs that were out there were CryptoKitties. Do you remember when CryptoKitties came out?
Yeah, they clogged up the Ethereum chain.
Yeah. Well, they did. They clogged up the Ethereum chain. But I remember a guy, I can't remember what it was, but he owned the most expensive CryptoKitty at the time. And I remember him, I was standing outside New York of the Coin Agenda conference when I was up there. And the guy was standing out there, and I forget which cryptocurrency he created, but he was showing this person his CryptoKitty on his phone, and I'm standing outside with him, and he said he bought it for $250,000. And I think there's CryptoKitties out there now that have sold for over $3 million. So that guy's CryptoKitty, and I was thinking back in the day, who the hell would pay $250,000 for that thing? Now it's, I mean, the guy's probably, you know, the thing's worth probably millions of dollars at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, you never can tell how these things are going to progress. It's a brave new world. But I agree with you. I mean, I was floored when I looked up this Decentraland and I saw that it's just virtual land. You know, it's a piece of land you buy on a virtual universe and you can build stuff and improve it and people buy and sell it. I mean, it's something in my mind as a person, in my 40s, I would never do.
Right.
But the kids, you know, this is they do it. And I saw one piece when I was browsing it. They want $250,000 for it. So yeah, they're moving also for big money, which just seems crazy to me.
What's the game that they use block? Was it with the squares, the characters? All the kids play it. There's Roblox and there's
You're talking about Minecraft.
Yeah. I mean, it's like digitizing Minecraft, really. You're improving all those buildings, and then you sell your house to somebody in Minecraft, and then now they don't have to build it, and they'll pay you $300,000.
Yeah, something ridiculous. Well, the new thing right now is...
God bless dorks with money.
Exactly. Well, there's Polkadot. There's Pokemon now. So it's kind of like a Pokemon kind of mixed with CryptoKitties a little bit. But it just launched the other day, and there are these little dragons, and they all have different unique qualities, and you go buy some coins, and you can actually crack open an egg, and you get your own little dragon. And they're selling, some of them sold for over $60,000 already. This thing just launched 2 days ago. So I would, in the website...
I'm thinking you should craft the first ever Mike Brown NFT. For all Bengals fans out there, our beloved owner.
Yeah, we'll get a video of him like as the draft's going on, kind of sleeping in his office. Like as the draft's happening, he'll be asleep in his chair in his office, and we'll do a video of him and we'll make an NFT out of it during the draft, Mike Brown sleeping in his office.
The only NFT of Mike Brown's I want is the actual transcript of his resignation as owner and allowing somebody else to come over, take over, or the original draft of him signing a general manager.
I want
one of those two.
That would be great. I want to tokenize the Bengals though. What if we created a token for the Bengals? Like it's worth $2 billion or something, the Bengals? So,
listen,
you know,
Adam, I wrote a white paper on this exact subject 2 years ago. I have the whole white paper written. And you know who I submitted it to? The XFL. I said, listen, you guys are having money problems. Tokenize all your teams and let the fans make the decision on the team.
Would have been a great idea.
If you give the fans, I it's all written. If you want to send it to the Bengals, I'll send it to you today.
Send it to me. Oh, I love it.
Because I'm telling you, if you give fans insight into making decisions on coaching and personnel, et cetera, man, they'll pay for it. And think, you have ownership.
How much input are we? No, but seriously,
every token holder would get a vote, essentially. Like, it depending on how many tokens you hold,
vote on what?
On decisions, on whatever you want to do.
We're
free agency.
Like, you talk about signing players.
Mm-hmm.
Screw that.
Everything.
Have you ever gotten onto the comments section of anything to do with any sport and listen to see what people write and what they talk about?
I mean,
people
are morons. Well, they are, but then those people usually don't have any money either. So they wouldn't get that much of a vote.
Some of the wealthiest people in the world think they know everything about sports and they don't.
But yeah, Mike Brown, for instance.
Exactly.
But think about this though. You look at how virtual sports, the amount of money they're worth nowadays. So there's a company called What If Sports that does virtual football.
And they're based in Cincinnati. They're here.
Yeah, based in Cincinnati.
And exactly, so is Pro right. Pro Football Focus is based here now too.
Yeah. So think about it. If you start to tokenize, you can actually have a team that's tokenized and you can make a difference of what decisions you make, et cetera. But listen, people want input into their team, and having input into their team, people will pay for it. I think the idea of a tokenized sports team is a hugely great concept.
Yeah, I think it totally is. I mean, it couldn't get any worse. I mean, Kyle, you're talking about decision makers.
I don't want
what do
people
we got now?
I know having any input whatsoever on player personnel. If they want to pick the like uniform design or the color of the new seats in a new stadium, knock yourself out.
Well, look at this right now. So, okay.
Or what about a vote? What about a vote on who the head coach is
or who the draft pick is?
No. No.
What if the general manager says, "Here's the three choices we're looking at for the coach. Here's their resume. Here's the interview. These are all private. You have to log in. And if you're a token holder, you can log in and vote."
Absolutely not. They can vote. I just don't. If the general manager gives that vote any sort of acknowledgement, he's a moron because he's the one that's going to get fired.
Well, think about this. This is how crypto works. It's democratized, decentralized, right?
Dude, some things don't need to be decentralized.
Yeah.
Selecting your head coach when your job's on the line. And relying on some guy that went to played football at St. X and another guy that played football at Coleraine, and then you got the guy that played at Elder, and then those three guys deciding who the new head coach for the Cincinnati Bengals should be. That's like me. That's like me having input on who their first pick in the draft should be.
I see what Kyle's saying because I did see a tweet. I don't know if you remember, Luke, but there was a lady, because since you were out of the country, she put Gorilla Glue in her hair. She tried to style her hair with Gorilla Glue. And as you know, Gorilla Glue is based here. And I think the lady is also here in Cincinnati. So somebody put on Twitter, "This lady's vote counts just as much as mine."
Yeah, no. But I mean, listen, you can have a structure for how people vote, and you can even have a structure where only certain people vote, but you can take your tokens and you can house your tokens to support somebody, right?
Well, Luke,
there's a lot of ways. But
there's
but
a lot
think
of ways
of this,
you can
I'm
break
just,
it up. Yeah.
Look at the All-Star games.
I'm telling you, it's the future. Look Even at, if the NFL doesn't do it, one of these little football
their popularity
leagues is going to do it, and they're going to make money.
They'll make money, and it'll have to be a minor league because they will not be operating efficiently. I am telling you this right now. Look at Major League Baseball. Look at how many old bastards, like Ozzie Smith getting voted ahead of Barry Larkin every year as the All-Star League starting shortstop in the National League. When everybody
Until he retired.
In their right mind knew, after 1990, Barry Larkin was the best shortstop in the National League.
Arguably one of the best ever.
And they kept voting in him because he was slick with his glove and he would do a backflip when he went to shortstop. Like, that was all Ozzie Smith had.
Yeah, and he could steal bases.
I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. Don't get me wrong, but shit, he wasn't Barry Larkin.
No,
You can't leave it up to sports fans to have input on creating a team because sports fans are fucking stupid. Sorry.
You're using the same argument that I hear Sandy telling me about Trump. This is what happened when you let people vote. If we can vote for president, surely we can vote for who our football coach should be.
No, because then you get stuck with Biden. I don't want the Biden equivalent coaching the Cincinnati Bengals.
Bruce Kozlik.
If the Bengals end up like the U.S. government, that means every 4 years someone will be happy.
No, that's true.
50%. We got to win once in a while.
No. That's incorrect because the greatest thing that the government's ever done is there's no way to win the game of government. It's an ongoing conglomeration of mess. That's all it is. So, yes, half the people will be happy that their guy's the one directing the blob. But with the NFL, you either win the championship or you don't. There's a definitive purpose to owning.
Maybe we need to make an NFT of Tom Brady. And whatever team get that NFT, they'll win the Super Bowl that year,
yes.
At least for the next couple.
That's fine. And I'm with you on that, but letting morons that I know have any input in anything that has to do with the actual performance on the field, I will fight you to the death on this one.
Well, dudes are saying,
all right. Well, I'm glad I'm a long way away so that Kyle can't kill me, but you know, not all ideas in crypto work well.
That's true. That's
that
true.
Want to see my white paper, send me an email.
There you go. Well, Luke,
I thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, I thought it was a good idea. What else do you want to leave people with? I mean, we're you know, past an hour, I think, at this point. So what do you want to...
Check out, there's one other project that I've been involved with that I talked to you about earlier. That's a super cool project. And the return on it's about 180%, I think, right now. Jesus. And it's called Orion.
You said that last week. Yeah.
Sticker. Yeah, Orion is a really cool project because you have all of these different exchanges across the internet. And, you know, you have to log in and get an account to each one. Orion is going to become a place where you log in. They go across all the exchanges, find out which one has the best price for whatever token or coin it is you want to buy. And you buy it there and it goes into your wallet. And right now they have a liquidity provider section where you can do the same as on DYP. And that liquidity provider section is paying 180 to 200% right now, depending. And soon they're going to have a staking mechanism where you stake their tokens and their tokens pay you a dividend. And I think it's going to become a really, really good project. Last month it was $6. It went to 30 on news of the platform release. The platform released today and it's sitting around 18 to 20. But I think the next leg up on that token is going to be probably to the $40, $50 range. But most importantly, second quarter of this year, they're going to start the staking. And there's going to be, I believe, some really, really good returns. It's another one where I really like the project. Again, just take a look at it and keep it in mind. Because I think in the future, you're going to see it a lot if they're successful with linking all these exchanges. Because Adam and I were talking earlier, the big exchanges, there's so many of them. If there's a token on an exchange that you want, it's a lot of work to do the KYC and the AML and go to that exchange and get that token. And then you have to remember the password and it becomes really a headache. And I think Orion is building a better mousetrap.
Hey, Luke, can I email you and can you walk me through this? Cause I've looked at Orion last week and I'm not the most tech savvy guy. It's kind of like when I speak Spanish, I understand it and I can visualize it. But if you ask me to explain certain things.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. I mean, Orion is one of the easier ones to get involved with. DYP takes even a little bit more work, but you know, it's well worth it. But again, I leave people with the word, it's not without risk. But so far with DYP, my risk has been rewarded, so I like it. If tomorrow you read in the newspaper that DYP has been hacked, then you can have me on the show and listen to me cry next week.
All right, well, I'm going to shoot you something here on WhatsApp. If you could help me out at some point when you have time, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm around this weekend. So, I'm chilling in Dubai. Got some stuff to do tomorrow, but if you're around Sunday after church or anything, let me know.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right, Luke. All right.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. I mean, it's the first couple podcasts I've ever done, but I have a good time with you guys. And, you know, I hope we give people some information or at least, they get a laugh off of us and wonder what the hell it is we're thinking.
Yeah, and keep an eye on what all those rich people are doing in Dubai and report back so that we give us some content for the podcast because I know they got some side hustles that are bringing in a lot of money over there.
Yeah, I'm going to go June 2nd and 3rd. They're having a big DeFi conference here, so I'm going to go to the DeFi conference and see what I can find.
Oh,
if things
dude.
Open up, Adam, you should jump on a plane and come see me.
Dude, you got to get me connected with one of those people who don't want to pay like the high tariffs on new cars. You know, so they have somebody in America drive a car around for a year and then send it back to them. Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
A lot of people in China do that.
All right, Adam, can you drive my Ferrari for a year and then send it to me?
Yeah, I'm down, dude. Totally. I'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll let you know when the day comes that I can afford one.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have a parking lot in my place in Miami. I'm going to need a nice car down there. So
yeah, that's where you want to do. You don't
We see who's making all the money on this show. Kohler.
I don't know these 300% returns you got going on. You seem to be doing all right.
Yeah, but when you put $12 in, it don't add up to a lot.
That's true. Oh, and I want to report Kyle and I both invested in a big mining project down in, because, you know, we like to put our money where our mouth is on this podcast. And if there's a side hustle out there that we can make some money on, we like to talk about it. So we invested in this big mining project. I think it's the biggest in the world now down in Texas.
It's part of the Windstone project.
Part of the Windstone project. And we got 10% of our investment back, which wasn't much, in January, right? Was it in January?
End of January, early February.
Because they're paying us quarterly, right?
Yeah.
So now we're getting probably 35% of what we originally put in this quarter. And it's a Bitcoin mining project operation. And I think the thing is whatever we're getting from it happens every quarter for what, the next 5 years?
Yeah. I mean, I ran the numbers off of it based off of like 100 Bitcoin or whatever a month is what they've been averaging. Is that it? Is that how many they've, 6 months? They've had six.
Something. The best day they ever had was over $250,000 in Bitcoin money.
The new email said 333.
333 now.
Well, 333,000. I don't know about number of Bitcoin, but.
But yeah.
What I'm saying is that if it gets up to like 100K, we're like, I don't know. I don't even want to think about it.
So you guys hide all the good deals for me. I need to listen to the podcast.
Well, there's another one coming up. Our buddy, he's doing a Filecoin mine.
I think that closed. I don't think that worked out.
No. It's coming up.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they're putting the details together now. It's coming up. A buddy of mine, he's a big
Filecoin's doing well.
Yeah. Well, my buddy, he's a big Filecoin guy, but he's awesome when it comes to hardware, and he builds these mines. But a buddy of mine, Tim, he just hit me up because he's got a ton of Bitcoin, and the minimum investment's $100,000 in this Filecoin thing.
I'm out.
He said I'm out, but he's like, oh yeah, $100,000, that's fine. Because some investors, Luke, you know this, people with real money, when you tell them it's like a $10,000 minimum investment, they're like, well, why would I put that? Like, I'm not going to get in anything like that. But if you tell them it's $1 million or something crazy, they're like, oh, it sounds like it, you know, because they want to make real money.
You got to create an LLC.
The guy told me in Dubai, he say, don't tell them $1 million, they'll laugh at you. He say, tell them 50.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
Anyway. All right, Luke. Well, it was a good time again, and hopefully people learned a little something on this, and you know, we'll continue to do our thing on this podcast. I'm actually turning the castle, and here's an announcement for everybody before we jump off here. The castle is essentially going to be the side hustle castle now. So what we're going to do is we're going to have meetings, now that COVID's over and everything, have people from the community come in who want to do side hustles or want to share the side hustle that they're doing. And my buddy Charles, he's sitting out there right now. His new nickname is Charlie Side Hustle. It's like Charlie Hustle, because he's a Cincinnati guy, but Charlie Side Hustle. And so he's actually going to do, he's got an income, so he doesn't necessarily have to have a job. So he is going to be our guinea pig for a lot of these side hustles. So if somebody has an idea for a side hustle, get on the Side Hustle City Facebook page, give us an idea, and Charles might pick your idea and do that side hustle and see if it brings any money in.
Well, here's one right here.
Yeah. So we'll do some DeFi stuff and see if it brings in any money, Luke.
Yeah, no, you know, one good idea for you guys, and then I'm sorry I keep continuing the episode, but, you know, people in the community are going to need a little bit of help if they want to get involved in DeFi. If you have someone there that learns to do it, you could even have a class where people can come in and you can help them, sort of like when we started a Cincy Crypto back in the day.
Yeah, this would kind of be a mix of Cincy Crypto and Side Hustle City.
Nice.
I like it, Luke.
All right, look forward to seeing you guys soon.
All right, man, get to bed. Late.
I'm gonna do it.
All right.
Later.
See ya.
Bye-bye.